What's up, everyone? Aaron Nagler here with Cheesehead TV. That's right. We're a day late, but we're still going to talk some Packers Titans with Andy Herman. Let's talk some football. Andy, what's up with this defense? Is this legit progression? Is this development, or is it aided and abetted by the snow and a bit of a mirage?
I'm going to go with the former. I thought this was a really impressive performance. And I thought for one of the first times all season, it looked like 11 players playing together as a team and not just 11 individuals playing defense. And I thought you saw from one of the first snaps of the game, the defense really playing together, filling their gaps, having gap integrity. I was fairly excited with just the overall play. I think you've seen two things over the course of the last 3 to 4 weeks. I think we've seen, and I think everyone's seen Darnell Savage take a legitimate jump and start becoming more of a playmaker. I think that's helped a ton. And then I've said for a while, I really believe that this defense is set up is a focus of Kenny Clark. And when he is playing incredibly well, he sets the tone in the middle of the defense, and it makes the edge rushers' jobs easier. It makes those other defensive linemen's jobs easier. It makes the linebackers' jobs easier. And when, I know they didn't play it a ton in this game, but when Mike Pettine wants to do some of his light nickel and light dime situations, you have to have a beast in the middle of the field that's dominating. Kenny Clark's been that the last few weeks, and I think that's really been a huge piece of that as well.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because as we know, Andy actually breaks down every single snap, every single game. And I do think, look, I know Kenny is the man, right? And as you say, it is funny how, like, every year it seems like he rounds into shape kind of down the stretch, right? Yeah. Like early on. And then we know he was hurt earlier this year. There's no question he missed time. But even in his healthiest years, it does seem that as the year goes on, he gets stronger and plays better. And I don't think this year has been any exception. It's funny, though, because the perception seems to be, because he's not making the highlight reel with regularity, that he is not playing, quote, up to his contract, which is something I hate. I hate that football fans in general do that kind of thing. But I'm so glad to hear you say that, because it can add a voice to this idea that just because he's not appearing on SportsCenter or on your Twitter feed doesn't mean that he is not doing heroic work down in and down out. Because you look at that game, it's so clear, especially with a team like the Titans that want to run the football, that the kind of a number one responsibility the offense had in that game was control, or try to control, Kenny Clark.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's multiple times, and again, this isn't anything that's ever going to show up on the stat sheet, but where the line of scrimmage is changed. I should have taken a picture of it, because there's one play where his guy is 3-4 yards into the backfield. The rest of the line of scrimmage is right where it is, and his guy is 3-4 yards in the backfield, and Derrick Henry has to kind of cut around Kenny Clark, and then there's a hole for the linebacker to come in or the safety to come in and fill. And you just saw that over and over and over. And in these last couple weeks, not only has it been in the run game, but he's started to provide pressure. And when you've got Gary and Z and Preston coming off the edge, if the quarterback just has somewhere to step up in the pocket, it doesn't matter what you're doing along the edges. When Kenny Clark's able to kind of, you know, get that pressure, or even just collapse the pocket,
or just make a wall, right?
Exactly. Like,
just so he doesn't have a place to step up. Exactly.
You know, he's more of a slow burn pass rusher. He's usually not going to have the Aaron Donald one step and explode. He's had a couple of those, but that's the exception to the norm. But when he has the ability to push that pocket, then it just gives the edge rusher so much opportunity to get more of those pressures.
Talking about that edge rush, I mean, it is funny because you did mention Savage, but Rashawn Gary has been playing well, I'd say, for the last month and a half. There's no question there, but he's really kicked it into gear these last, kind of say, two games, this game in particular. You know, we made a note of it during the watch party, this idea that you're watching Gary affect the quarterback so that Darnell Savage can pick it off. I mean, it's like Brian Gutekunst's first round picks from 2 years ago are just like, oh, this is progressing very nicely. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
You love to see that.
Yeah, and really the first interception was the pressure by Gary that resulted in the pick by Savage. And then the near pick six was, you know, the best pressure on that play was by Rashawn Gary as well. And again, the reason that, even though, again, as we discussed right after the draft, Rashawn Gary wasn't my 1A choice at the time, the reason I said at the time that Rashawn Gary will never bust, because one, he's an effort guy, and two is because he's always going to be a consistent guy setting the edge. And I thought you saw that consistently. And all three, Za'Darius, Preston, Rashawn, all were really good at that in this game. But Rashawn Gary definitely brought his A game when it came to that, funneling everything back inside to Kenny Clark, Tyler Lancaster, those guys. And then you see his ability when he gets going from converting speed to power. You know, he's can just be an absolute machine, and you saw that a little bit as well in this game.
I'm glad you mentioned Lancaster. Shout out to Tyler, who I thought did like real lunch pail work. Like, he's never going to get a shout out, so shout out to him. Look, he's not a superstar, we all know that, but man, he is definitely playing his best ball at the right time, as most of this defense is. Speaking of the wrapping up on the defensive side, what did you think of Chris Barnes? Because it was funny to see them. A lot was made on the broadcast about, you know, the lone linebacker. They had the 5-1 sometimes, etc. Again, I think it's up and down, but he answered some questions about physicality. I thought he did a really nice job as far as shedding some of that stuff that, you know, once that interior gets up to the second level, there have been times where he's been kind of erased. And I thought he did a much better job in this game of maybe not even just completely disengaging, but at least making sure that he's in position to affect the play and or, you know, be in the ball carrier's way, so to speak, even if he was getting partially blocked.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, Kenny Clark and Darnell Savage and Rashawn Gary improving their games over the last month, and that's been a huge key to this defense. To me, finding that every down linebacker in Chris Barnes is another piece of that. And is it perfect at this point? No, it's not perfect. You're going to see him take some false steps. You're going to see him misalign sometimes and just some of those rookie type of mistakes, right? But he is the one linebacker to me that has the consistency and ability to play on all three downs, play against the pass, play against the run, and do it with, again, the same level of consistency. And I think he's going to grow into that role even more. There were a couple plays, one I highlighted, where he legitimately, on an effort to go get Derrick Henry, they're cutting him. He avoids the cut, goes between two.
Oh, that was amazing. That was a great catch, by the way. I totally missed that when I was rewatching.
It's easy to miss because he literally disappears off the screen as he goes between two Titans, and then he would have been right there to make a play.
And he emerges on the other side like bamfed, like, yeah, exactly. X-Men or something.
And then he had another play too where he avoided a cut block and got to the ball carrier. So you're seeing him start to trust his instincts more and just let his athleticism take over. And I think, again, the fact that you don't have to sub in and make different changes at the linebacker position, have a rundown linebacker, then it solidifies that defense and gives you one linebacker on all three downs.
And then, of course, there's the lockdown corner in Jair Alexander, who, I mean, what more is there to say about this kid that we haven't said already? We've talked about an All-Pro campaign. I think he's made the Pro Bowl already. If he isn't an All-Pro, there should be an investigation.
Yep.
There's nothing. You can't overpraise him, is I guess what I'm saying.
No, and it's another one of those players, you know, somewhat like Kenny Clark, that is, it's easy to miss because, yeah, you see some of the pass breakups, but he's not making some of the pick sixes or the interceptions, right? Because teams aren't throwing at him a ton. And when he is, you know what? He's normally batting the ball away, which, yeah, it's not a pick, but who the heck cares if you're shutting down your side of the field in a lot of one-on-one situations against a lot of really good receivers? Who cares if you're getting the picks? You're doing your job at an exceptionally high level. He, by far and away, one of my favorite players to watch every week. There, the best thing I can say about Jair, there is zero panic and zero fear in him at any given time. It doesn't matter what receiver is across from him. It doesn't matter what they're doing. It doesn't matter if they're going deep, intermediate, short, left, right, middle. It does not matter. He feels at all times like he is in phase to break up the play, because 99.9% of the time he is. It's crazy.
What's crazy to me, he has perfected. I mean, perfected the technique of arriving, timing his arrival with the ball, getting his hand hooked around the receiver to use as leverage when he's going with his offhand to bat the ball away, but not turning the guy. You see so many guys who try that technique and then end up turning him and getting a penalty. Hell, we've seen guys on the Packers do this, but repeatedly. But with Jair, it's always, the timing is always impeccable, and he doesn't turn him almost ever. And that, to me, that's incredible. I mean, it's like the speed at which that is all happening, and to see him do it consistently tells you it's not a fluke. He's literally doing it almost every time. It's mind-blowing to me. It's how good he is.
that consistency and that confidence does him so incredibly well. But how many times, Aaron, have we seen in practice where Davante Adams goes to line up and Jaire Alexander says, no, I got this. And you just have to imagine that those two being able to go against each other every single day in practice, that is the number one wide receiver in football going against an all pro corner day in and day out. I mean, if Jaire can stick with Davante on routes, you can stick with anyone, right?
Exactly.
And same thing, if Davante can figure out ways to beat Jaire Alexander, you can beat pretty much anyone. That is a classic iron sharpens iron. And I can't imagine that it's been any, you know, it's been so beneficial for both of those guys to be able to see each other in practice every day.
That's a really good point. You got to think that's the case. Let's flip it around. Talk about the offense, and you got to start. I mean, obviously Aaron Rodgers is MVP. Davante Adams is a demigod. We all know this, but AJ Dillon arriving on the scene. It was, to me, this is what I loved about the game as far as like watching him from his first carry to his last. Talk about a very apparent case of getting stronger as the game goes on. And you look at those first couple carries, 1 yard, 1 yard, 2 yards. And then all of a sudden you fast forward to, you know, a couple drives later, those same, pretty much same, similar concepts. All of a sudden he's ripping off 6 yards, 9 yards, 12 yards. And as the game is going on, he's becoming more and more punishing. You know, early on, those guys are giving him licks. And they're like, yeah, what's up? Welcome to the NFL, rookie. And then by the third and fourth quarter, he is running through people's faces. That's, you know, that to me, that's December in Lambeau, stretch run. That is exactly what the Packers signed up for.
Well, and it's so funny because how many times have, you know, the player, the Packers signed a player, or drafted a player, and, you know, everyone wants to label him as this exact sort of player. And you get AJ Dillon, everyone and their mothers, right. Like basically, you know what, he's going to be, you know, right. Wait till December comes and the snow of Lambeau, he's going to be running through people. And it's exactly the case. Like, this guy is built for this type of football at this time of year. And for the, you know, I went back when he first came out, obviously Boston College, and I highlighted a series in a game where it's a 4 minute offense situation, and Boston College, I forget who they're playing against, and there's 8 or 9 guys in the box on every single play. They hand it to AJ, to Dillon for like 8 or 9 straight plays. And it's just, it's nothing flashy. It's nothing sexy. Right. It's just 4, 5, 6 yards against a crowded box every single time. And they can't do anything about it. This guy is a closer, and I do think that they have to figure out some sort of role for him in these sort of situations in December, January, February football to get him the ball late in games. It's not going to be an issue in the future, but it is an issue. And as you know, I asked Matt LaFleur, you know, how do you, you know, feed all these mouths on offense right now, especially when Jamal and maybe Tyler Irvin and Sternberger and all these guys come back. There's a lot of mouths to feed on this offense. But to me, this is a classic example of you've got to find a way to let him close football games, because, you know, you're not stopping him late in games when the defense has been worn down.
Well, it's interesting. I do think there's a possibility that injury kind of shakes that out for the Packers in week 17, at least. I mean, who knows what Jamal will look like. You saw Aaron Jones get banged up after being on the injury report all last week. So who knows? Dillon may be the bell cow, at least for one more week. But it is, I do want to talk about what you just brought up as far as mouths to feed, because I've seen some rumblings on the old Twitter sphere. You know me, I'm on twitter.com occasionally, about where's MVS gone? Why isn't MVS getting the ball? And to me, it's not that mystifying. Like, there are two guys who you have to game plan for. That's Davante Adams and Aaron Jones. After that, it's going to be opponent dependent, specific, from not only from week to week, but series to series, depending on what the defense is presenting you. And it's like, where's Tonyan been?
Yeah.
You know, it's like there are guys who are going to rise and fall week after week, dependent on A, the game plan, but B, what the defense is doing. And the only two guys that they're going to make sure touch the football every single game are Davante and Aaron Jones.
And I love it. I'm glad you brought this up as well, because we've seen times in the past, you know, how many post-game press conferences have there been over the years where, you know, people have had to ask, you know, why didn't you get so-and-so involved in the game? Because that's your star player. And it didn't even seem like there was a plan to get him involved. Right. Davante Adams is the 1A, and they're feeding him as much as possible because he's the best, one of the best receivers on the planet Earth right now. So it makes sense that you're going to get him a ton of targets. Same thing with Aaron Jones. Feed your alphas and make sure that they get as many touches as humanly possible in advantageous situations. And then let things sort themselves out from there. And I think, you know, one of the reasons with MVS Well, Alan Lazard came back, and Alan Lazard went back to being the number two receiver, and that's going to bump MVS down in the pecking order a little bit. Does it mean that he's getting, you know, significantly less playing time or that he's a worse player? No, he's the same guy. It's just he becomes your third wide receiver option, which, oh, by the way, is probably still behind potentially two running backs and a tight end at that point. So you go, and again, you also mentioned the fact that it's going to be game plan and opponent specific. Well, they opened up this week with Dominique Daphne and Tavon Austin in their offense. In, you know, those guys, and it looked great, right? So like, they're going to scheme specific situations and scenarios. They're still feeding the ball a ton to Aaron Jones and Davante Adams as they should. But now, all right, where are our mismatches everywhere else? There's going to be weeks where that's MVS down the field. There's going to be weeks that that's Alan Lazard over the middle, or, you know, AJ Dillon closing games. It's just going to be a different player every week. And that's totally fine, as long as, again, you're featuring Aaron Jones and Davante Adams as your primary two.
Look, when you go into a game and you watch Equanimeous St. Brown catch a touchdown pass, no one was expecting that.
Right.
I mean, it's not like we were sitting here going, why aren't they getting EQ the ball? You know, they're going to bite you in any number of ways. They got tons of different ways to kill you. And that's what I love about the offense.
Absolutely.
Let's look at the offensive line, because we had the return of Corey Linsley. Clearly, they were still operating at a high level without him these last 3 weeks. But you do notice it is significantly better with him in there. And I don't mean to, you know, say that, oh, Elton wasn't holding up at center, but I do think there is a ripple effect that when at quote unquote full strength, it's just so much, it's so, to me, so noticeable as far as Corey's ability, not only to operate in pass pro pre-snap, but then post-snap, whether it's in the run game, getting to the second level, some of those seals in the middle, it's just, they are better with him in there. And I think it's pretty apparent.
Unequivocally, easily one of my favorite players to watch every single week. You know, he's what I've labeled as the most consistent Green Bay Packer on the team, even with the Davante Adams, the
quietly Aaron Rodgers. So too, it's weird.
Exactly.
Like, and you don't even notice it almost.
And I think that just shows his level of consistency. Like, when is the last, I want everyone listening to remember, when is the last time you remember Corey Linsley get beat clean? Like, legitimately, like, you've seen a sack or like, it just, it almost never, ever happens. I mean, he's so consistent in the middle of the field. And then, as you mentioned, he sets up everyone else around him. Elton's better. You know, Lucas Patrick, Billy Turner is better when Corey Linsley's in there. And then again, it allows Elton Jenkins to go back to his normal spot. You know, Billy was displaced a little bit going back to right guard in this game, but it just makes everyone amongst that offensive line better. And we've seen the success that they've had running in the middle of the field, especially between Elton Jenkins and Corey Linsley when those two are tag teaming up front.
Do you think, we don't know what's going to happen with, I haven't seen any reports anyway, as far as Wagner goes. I know he left the game with an injury. Were you surprised that they went with Wagner at tackle?
A little bit, only because it seemed like, you know, when Lucas Patrick was playing right guard and Billy Turner was playing right tackle with Linsley and Jenkins and Bakhtiari, that was their best offensive unit. And I know Patrick had struggled in the last couple
games. It felt like an overreaction to the Panthers game.
Yeah, because to me, his struggles were much more at left guard than ever they were at right guard. So I was surprised by that. And I thought too that, you know, Billy had played some really good football at right tackle, arguably better than he played at right guard as well. So it surprised me a little bit. At the same token, you know, Matt LaFleur said all season long that he's going to go with matchups and trying to get his best five guys on the field for those specific matchups. And I think at this point we have to take him at his word that, you know, because we've seen in an in-game situation, John Runyon going over Rick Wagner. We've seen Rick Wagner now get a start over Lucas Patrick. We've seen them mix and match in a variety of different ways, dependent upon the opponent. This is not a situation where, like a lot of other coaches, they're just going to take five guys and play them at the same five spots every single game, no matter what. This is a head coaching staff that is looking for any advantage they can get at any point in time. And if that's playing Billy at right guard and Rick at right tackle and benching Lucas for a game, and that might be, they might just, you know, do this moving forward, but it might just be a one game thing too. And that wouldn't surprise me at all either, based on matchups.
Let's look ahead quickly to this matchup, week 17 against the Bears. The Bears obviously putting up a lot of points these last 3-4 weeks. Their offense has come to life. How do you expect this to go down? Because I see a team in the Bears that is going to have to utilize the legs of Mitch Trubisky, because look, you're going to have Jair locking up Allen Robinson, at least, you know, would think the majority of the game.
Yep.
We saw Trubisky throw a couple really boneheaded decisions last time he was in Lambeau. It's not like those have disappeared. I think he'll throw up a few. The Packers just have to hold on to them. David Montgomery, to me, is the big worry. He's where, you know, we were inundated with the Derrick Henry hype heading into Sunday night's game. Obviously, the score dictated a lot of how much they could utilize him, even though they kept, you know, they continued to try throughout the game. I think this game is pretty similar in the sense that if the Packers can jump out to an early lead, obviously that plays into their favor regardless, but especially against this team where, again, I think it's the legs of Trubisky and Montgomery that are the biggest worries offensively.
Yeah, to some extent, it's kind of nice that you're just coming off of a Titans game and really, I think, can play the Bears in a very similar fashion. I think, you know, you have to worry probably a little bit more about Allen Robinson than A.J. Brown down the field, but two bigger physical wide receivers, you know, Jonnu Smith, Jimmy Graham, and then, of course, David Montgomery, like you mentioned, is the player that they're going to have to focus 1A on, similarly to what they had to do against Derrick Henry. And then you've got a mobile quarterback, Ryan Tannehill and Mitch Trubisky. I think Tannehill obviously hurts you more down the field, but Mitch has been playing better. But as you mentioned, still going to make two or three of those just absolutely boneheaded decisions each week that you've got to find a way to take advantage of. So to me, it's making sure that you take advantage of that and get those couple mistakes from Mitch. And I think if you can do that, I think that's easily can be the difference in this game. I mean, the Packers are like the casino. They hold the house like money. Like they don't turn the ball over. And if you, and they don't make those mistakes, no penalties, no punts, no turnovers, except for obviously the Rodgers had the one boneheaded play, but you can have some accident forgiveness when it's, let's see, his fifth of the season. Other than that, they're like the casino. And if you're making mistakes against it, they're just going to beat you all day.
There you go. All the latest on the football side from Mr. Andy Herman, the Don of the Pack a Day podcast and purveyor of fine Packers takes everywhere on the internet. Andy, thank you so much.
Let's do it again sometime, Aaron.
That's